would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might want to stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
Tonight when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Welcome to St. John Forward Radio. I'm John Forward. Still living the same boring life as everybody else. Did get to leave my house once this week. While I was at the grocery store, I'm really starting to wonder, are old men just stupid or stubborn? I can't really tell, because the grocery store's got all their social distancing way of doing things. They've got arrows, the aisles are all one way, they only let so many people into the store at the same time. It's mildly annoying, but it's a small imposition. I generally will follow the rules of the grocery store so I can still get groceries. And even if it's not doing anything, I feel like if there's anybody else in the store that's paranoid, then at least they feel a little bit safer in their one-way bubbles. Past the same three old guys, there's like three different guys that I kept passing like every other aisle, because they're going in the exact opposite way. And part of me on the inside wanted to be like, yeah, fight the power. But also part of me that I didn't think was there was a little bit like, you're not following the rules. Don't you know what the rules are? And I don't know if they do know what the rules are. Again, I don't know if they're just stupid and they don't understand what an arrow on the ground means, or if they just don't care. Like, I'm not gonna let these draconian grocery stores tell me how to shop. And I don't know what it is. I'll go the other way. I still pass by people if they're too slow in front of me. I hold my breath when I do it. I wore my face mask this week, which, I don't know, nobody really gave me the stink eye, but these old guys just could not give less of a shit. Just going whichever way they want, regardless of all the stink eyes and the nasty faces people are making at them the whole time. Is it entitlement or is it stupidity? I don't know. I'm not mad. I wasn't like angry that they were threatening my life with possible exceptions, but other people in the store were upset. Nobody was doing anything about it, which what do you want them to do? There's one like 40-year-old guy that when one of the old men walked by him the wrong way, there was like a 17-year-old shelf stalker girl there, and he was like, bitch. And just like without saying anything, just like, why aren't you acting on this? Throw this man in jail. But yeah, he's old, he's more susceptible. I don't know if I'm saying that word right or not, but he's more at risk than the rest of us. So if he's not gonna follow the rules, let him die. Or I don't know. We're all following the rules. That's what they're hammering into us on the news. Follow the rules, follow the rules, follow the rules. And I'm following them. I'm hoping it makes a difference. It's certainly going to slow things down, just logically. It's probably better to have a bunch of people get sick over the course of a year than a bunch of people get it all over the course of a month. But none of us really knows how the long-term economic costs of shutting everything down is going to cancel out. If we could save one life by completely shutting down the country, then we'd probably be like, well, that's an overreaction. If we could save 50 million lives by shutting down all of the businesses in the whole country, then we'd be like, yeah, that's probably a fair trade-off. But I don't know what the number is in between, because for sure a year from now, 2 years from now, a decade from now, we're probably going to be in a bad spot economically. I don't think the just throwing money at the problem and spending billions of dollars on whatever is a good idea under normal circumstances, but having all this spending going on while businesses are shut down and people aren't working, so there's no tax revenue coming in, makes this even more of a bad idea. Again, it's getting people through moment to moment, but there are going to be consequences down the road, and we're all going to find out if they are worse than if we just had a free-for-all. Could be, might not be. It's going to be bad either way. It's just a matter of whether it's worse than what it could have been. I'm keeping an eye on Sweden. They have a different approach. They're mostly quarantining older people and other people that are at more of a risk, but you know, they haven't shut things down completely. There's no big, huge gatherings, but bars and restaurants are still open. People are going out. And, of course, the propaganda machine has already started. I only found out about this because, like, I just did a search for Sweden virus on Google, and the article titles are alarming. Coronavirus, has Sweden got its science right? What else we got here? Why Sweden's lax coronavirus approach could be backfiring. Swedish virus deaths top 1,000, fueling criticism over their whatever. I can't see the rest of it. Sweden continues with controversial coronavirus strategy. Oh, Sweden just passed a grim milestone, and it's all kind of doom and gloom. This is going very badly for Sweden. But then when you open up the article, it's like, well, it's not bad yet, but it probably will be, and they're not doing what everybody else is doing, and it's bad, and there's people coming out against it, and yeah, they do have a higher per capita death rate than the countries around them, but again, that's not really a good snapshot thing to look at in the moment. Time will tell. Once it's all, like, again, these other countries around them may end up with the same death toll, only spread out over further than Sweden has more, like, all at the top. But wait and see. Even if it is, if there is a little bit worse of an impact for the virus, but they don't ruin their country in the process, then it might be... Not that we can really do anything. We can't go back in time and be like, we told you so, and do what they did, but maybe next time we'll know better. Just the constant articles saying how disastrous this is probably going to be kind of makes me feel like, well, if it's not, are any of these people going to be like, oh, my bad, I guess I did the right thing, or are we just going to forget about it? But New Brunswick has actually been doing pretty well for our coronavirus numbers. It may just be because we're not testing enough people. Who knows? We are pretty spread out, though, compared to a lot of provinces. But they just announced a couple of days ago that they've got kind of a plan to scale back the lockdown, which, again, I'm not big on government ideas, but at least having an idea of scaling this back rather than we're going to do this forever until we say so, that's a little bit scarier. So at least kind of they've got like a four-step process, and with the extra bit, like if this goes bad, then we might need to cancel it out, which that's fine. Give it a try. And if it ends up everybody starts getting sick, then we'll be like, oh, well, wait, we were wrong. The first wave, a lot of the stuff isn't going to affect me anyway. Golf courses are opening, fishing and hunting. I don't do any of that stuff. Outdoor spaces we're allowed to go to, parks and stuff, I assume. You can carpool. I'm not sure if there's a person in the car with coronavirus, having them in the back seat is going to really... You're still locked up in a box, but whatever. Post-secondary education can open if they want to. I think they're pretty well done, but I don't know, summer classes or whatever. Outdoor religious services, it says drive-in. I'm hoping the drive-in movie theater opens. The Sussex Drive-In posted an article the other day about that, so that's something. We're all in our own cars. We can go to the movies that way. But the big thing that's getting all the press is the two-family bubble, where each house can pick another house to be its exclusive bestie. I'm not sure exactly how it's being implemented or enforced. I don't know if you have to register who your best house friend is on some website or fill out a form, or if it's just going to be on the honor system. But they've made it clear, like, and you can't change who it is, so choose wisely. And I don't know what to do with that. I feel like in school, whenever they would be like, all right, pair up for this next project, I'm like, oh, who am I going to go with? Like, well, I don't want to be in that person's group because they're useless and I don't like them. But that, well, I could be in a group with that person, but that person likes this other person better, so I'm probably not their first choice. But it's the same thing with the house thing. Like, May and I have friends, but, you know, some of them have kids who they probably want to go visit, so that's probably more of a priority. And, you know, there's other people that, like, we weren't big on visiting people's houses very often anyway. But, you know, any of our friends that I could think of, I'm like, well, yeah, we could go visit with that person, but, you know, they're better friends with this other, so I don't know. We're just gonna have to wait and see what other losers are left over when the dust settles and somebody needs to settle for the Forwell clan. But anyway, great show lined up for you. Brian Giles and I had a conversation, and you're going to see that after this other thing on St. John Forward Radio.
The time for action is now.
What up, Shay? Nah, none of that today. We ain't gonna shoot the breeze. I'm even 6 feet away. And hey, when I'm getting groceries, stand back. Don't approach me. I sanitize everything I panic by mostly. Mind focus, y'all. I'm feeling like I'm at war. Gloves on, mask on, going through them glass doors. Grab the carriage, pull it out, wipe it down. I'm past trying to look cool. I'm full psycho now. All the dudes flexing in the frozen food section. I respect them as my brethren, so I gotta keep stepping like the bitch. Six wild chicks and now six. Handpicking different style chips with their vile mitts. Now I'm feeling homicidal shit. I liken it to outbreak. I'm about to break and flip. Fishing for survival tips. The sirloin is sold out. No doubt I caught an L. Vanished like the Purell, Goldies, and Cottonelle. And I'm convinced everybody got a fever. I'm feeling like my debit gonna get it from the chip reader. I bag my own stuff. Careful at the checkout. Salute to the cashiers, but I gotta get out.
Quarantined by the CDC.
The time for action is now.
Going stir crazy, but yo, you burn crazy. Before the outbreak, and now you driving her crazy.
Flow quarantined by the CDC. CDC.
Look out! Look out! Going stir crazy, but yo, you burn crazy. Before
it's
this,
true, I'm going mad. This.
One time for the people on the front line. Shout to nurses, they the heroes when it's crunch time. I'm seeing people promise that they gonna stay home, and then they trying to go viral looking up payphone. Or they link up a friend to call it quarantine. It seems they don't understand just what the word means. Everybody going live for an audience of five, but I support it if it keeps your stupid ass inside. You should be home, being safe and bored, or playing with your laser sword to Maitland Ward. Praise the Lord. You know what gets me? Let's see. People on FB, they talking like they the CDC. And I'm about to go psychotic if I hear another peep about this Joe Exotic. I get it, I got it, I saw it, I thought it was a product that was wild, evil at best. And I'd love to watch a sequel with tigers, even to death. I ain't a madman to start piling guns, but yo, we ain't shaking hands in 2021. That goes for anyone, even my own kin. Why? The only 19 that I be messing with is Tony Quinn. Word. I'm slightly disturbed like Wendy Bird. And peace to the pizza guy, just leave it on the curb.
Flow quarantined by the CDC.
The time for action is now.
Going stir crazy, but yo, you burn crazy. Before the outbreak, and now you driving her
crazy. Flow quarantined by the CDC. CDC.
Look out! Going stir crazy, but yo, you burn crazy. Before the outbreak, and now you driving her crazy.
Crazy. All right, so welcome back to the show. I've got a very special guest on with us. This is a bit of a do-over. We had a conversation the other night, but we had imbibed a little bit, and anyway, we're doing a do-over. How's it going, sober Brian Giles?
It's great, man. Sun is shining. It's a beautiful day, beautiful Saturday. Lots of chores to do around the homestead, and I'm happy as a clam, my man.
In the truck studio,
in the old 2006 Ford F-150.
We're in lockdown. They actually just relaxed some of the New Brunswick rules as of yesterday a little bit.
Yeah, I saw somebody post something about that, and I'm a little confused. So Jacqueline Guptill, who is a friend of mine through Jeremy Irving, who's in the Hard Times and the Maritimes series with us, posted that that you could hang out with one other family in New Brunswick. Is that correct?
Like, yeah, you have to pick a household best friend for yourself. I'm not sure exactly how that works, or if there's going to be some kind of registry. But yeah, each household can pick one other household, and they've been clear that you can't change streams. So
wow.
And they're opening up like golf courses and parks and stuff like that. And I think you're allowed to carpool with coworkers and neighbors now, as long as the passenger is sitting in the back seat, which is, you know, in a car is much better than sitting right next to you. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's, if somebody has coronavirus and you're in the car, even if you're in the back seat, that's probably going to still be a problem, but whatever.
Also, that's, you know, it seems a little awkward and I don't know. Like, I don't know if I want to sit, but I don't know if I want my buddy or my coworker to drive me around in the back seat like I'm Miss Daisy. You know, that seems a little bit, interesting.
You know, I know God, so one of his friends in St. Stephen needed to fly out to some job that he has in, he needs to fly out from Moncton, and he's looking for a ride to the airport, and God so didn't want to get thrown in the gulag, so he was worried about that. But I think that's not significantly different than a carpool situation, so I figure that would probably be okay.
Yeah, I agree. If it's essential, you got to go to work. I think his buddy is Alex, works up in the north, and he works in what he's a cook for, like, I think some of the oil camps or whatever they are up there. But it's pretty extreme conditions, man. Like, he was saying, you can't go outside for more than like 2 minutes without getting frostbite on your face. I was like, what? It's insane.
Yeah, I had a hard time spending a few winters in Fredericton. I couldn't handle that. I went to university in Fredericton for a few years, and it gets really cold and really, it gets like really super cold in the winter and really super hot in the summer in Fredericton. I just, it's rough. Like, living in Fredericton in the summer is the first time that I was ever like sweaty in the house. but in the winter is just brutal. I used to take the bus to the university and just have to wait out for like even 15 minutes was crazy. I was one of the cart wranglers at the Sobeys in the Fredericton Mall for a little while. And some of those like early Saturday morning shifts where I had to go out and grab all the carts that people left behind the night before the store opens, like I would blink and my eyes would sometimes like freeze shut.
Oh, brutal.
Rough. So,
yeah. I mean, it gets cold here in Giles Landia in the field. Because we're on the top of a mountain, and so the wind, and it's an open field, and the wind will whip through here sometimes, and we get like negative 54 Fahrenheit, which I don't know what that is in Celsius, but it's cold.
Yeah, probably.
It gets mustache freezing cold up here. But
yeah.
Did you go to STU or UNB?
UNB.
UNB. My wife went to STU in Fredericton for all 4 years.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with the area. And she also was the deli manager at the Sobeys on Regent Street for a good amount of time over there.
There isn't a Sobeys on Regent Street.
Prospect? Sobeys on Prospect?
Wait. Yeah, that's the one.
Sobeys on Prospect, eh? Anyways, she was the deli manager over there. She loved it a good time. I kind of wish she had stuck with the grocery store game. Like, I mean, now she'd be an essential worker, but the Sobeys has this really great corporate ladder to climb, and she was like on her way to making some serious coin before she left the grocery store industry, making better money than a teacher makes working in the deli, managing the deli.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't there. I was a cart monkey. I worked cash a little bit. I never really climbed the chain. I don't remember any particularly bad experiences there. Usually most jobs that I have after a couple of years, even if I've got no good reason for it, I start getting like, screw these people. Everybody above me is an idiot. And how dare they tell me how to do my job? But yeah, I don't have any specific memories about that. And I just remember, meeting a previous girlfriend there who ended up being a nutcase. That's my main takeaway from my time at Sobeys.
Was it my wife?
Man! This coronavirus thing has got me really messed up because, you know, we were still seeing each other on the side, but now the border's locked down. You've got Donald Trump protecting your wife from me.
That's all right. May and I are still video messaging each other on a nightly basis, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So what are you guys doing to keep yourselves occupied during this time in lockdown? I mean, I'm here on the homestead, so I have, you know, goats to tend and chickens to tend and firewood to cut and buildings to build and all that stuff. I have plenty of hiking available. Where, I mean, you've got the Irving Park over there, but we've got like millions of hiking trails here in Maine. What is this city life during coronavirus like?
Yeah, I don't know if, now I think the parks are open, but I think public parks, I'm not sure. There's some like weird certain things were open and some weren't. I'm pretty sure the Irving parks were probably closed. I don't know if anybody's getting arrested in St. John, but people are definitely getting fines. I haven't been doing a whole lot. May's still working. She's working from home, though, so she's got a full-time job, and she's an accountant, and it's tax season, so she's pretty busy with that. More so because they've extended the tax deadline, so she's supposed to be done soon, but everybody's been given permission to drag their ass for an extra couple of months, so yeah. She's still in it.
Did your government send out any sort of stimulus? I know they extended EI payments to a lot of people that weren't normally qualified, like comics. I know comics are allowed to get EI and that sort of thing, but what, any stimulus money for you folks?
Yeah, they're not calling it that. Well, I got laid off because my company wasn't forced to shut down, but all of our profits come from stuff that we sell to another company who is forced to shut down. So I've been laid off for a month. I applied for EI, same as I would if I got laid off from a job under normal circumstances. The way that they've switched it, so it's not standard EI. Basically, everybody that applied for EI was transferred into this CERB thing, Canadian Earnings, I don't know, replacement bullshit, something like that. And I'm getting like $2,000 a month plus $500 a week. Which isn't too bad. I can get by on that, especially since I have nothing to spend my money on except for groceries and bills.
Yeah. Dude, I got to say, my financial situation has actually drastically improved during this whole shutdown. My wife and I were already, food canners and we had eggs from our chickens and all that stuff. We went on a couple of massive grocery shopping trips. So our normal grocery budget for the average week is around $100, and that counts gas for her car, pet food, whatever. About $100 a week, roughly, because we have a lot of stuff canned and frozen already, our produce and such. But we went on a couple of massive grocery shopping trips and bought some like real bulk items that we didn't have, like basmati rice and flour and that sort of thing. And of course, we haven't been driving our vehicles except to go to hiking trails. And we've only gone to the grocery store twice. And so my bank account is growing exponentially with my salary going in and, of course, the stimulus money. And then my income tax return came in. And we don't – my wife and I are terrible at eating out at restaurants. Like, if we are out on the road, we don't pack a lunch and take snacks and whatever. We stop and get food someplace whenever we're out. And we're foodies. So we love to go up to St. John and get Thai or go to Bangor and get sushi or go whatever we like to eat out. And I bet you we spend probably $300 a month on restaurants, if not more than that. Gas in this truck is about $50 a week. Gas for the car is about $30 a week. and all that stuff has been taken off the roster. And I quit smoking back in January. So that's another, you know, 10, 15 bucks a week that I haven't been spending. No bar tab. So that's not, you know, that's out of the picture. And so we're actually saving money. And it's pretty great, really, you know?
Yeah, like I already had some money saved up. I think we spend more on groceries than you do, but we spend too much on groceries anyway. I've gone out and got some big hauls from Costco over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, we've bought like a whole bunch of stuff all at once. But then as soon as we run out of like three little things, we've got to go back. And then I'm like, well, while I'm here, I might as well get this big pile of stuff that we've got a deep freeze. So it'll be going to good use. But yeah, I already had some money saved up anyway. Yeah, May's still getting a paycheck. I got, like when I got laid off, I got paid off all of my like vacation time that I had accumulated so far. So I had a week left over from last year that I didn't use just because I was trying to hang on to it just in case I wanted some extra time off. So I got paid out, and I think I had earned a week like up until where I stopped working. So I got basically an extra paycheck from work. I'm not entirely happy about that because when I go back to work, whenever they decide to get going again, that's probably 2 weeks of vacation that I've been forced to use, and I still kind of want the time off. So
yeah,
but I've already been paid out for it. So I don't know. I'm hoping that they'll let me take like an unpaid vacation week or something like that. I don't know if it's going to happen. Me and Godso and Scott Belford were supposed to do go on tour for a week in July. I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Yeah, dude. And that's the thing. Like, this isn't vacation time for anybody. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm appreciating the time at home. I get to finish a bunch of projects. I'm spending great quality time with my family, which has been incredible. But this certainly isn't a vacation. This isn't taking a trip to Boston and going to a concert or going, you know, going out to on a camping trip or something. This is like, you know, a very restricted time at home.
Yeah. And yeah, normally like time off, I'd be out doing stuff, like you said, at least stand-up shows, which isn't really an option. But I've been taking the opportunity to just do more other kinds of content. I haven't been writing stand-up as much as I probably should be, but it's kind of hard because I have no life experience going on right now. So it's mostly, but I sat down like 3 days ago for the first time in the last month that I've been at home and put on an album on my Spotify, and like, I'm going to sit down at the Google Docs and I'm not getting up until this album's done. So I just kind of skim through my notes of like generally how I go is I have like one file that's called Strays, where if I just have like an idea, I just put it in there so I don't forget it. And then when I want to sit down and write a new bit, I can go through that and pick through anything that either is strong enough on its own that it sparks something and I can flesh it out. Or if I'm working on something else, then I can find, oh, that thing that I thought of 2 years ago kind of fits in with this thing that I'm already working on. So I went through my old notes and I've got an idea for like two full, probably like 5 to 10 minute sets that I can flesh out, but I've got at least the bones of it. So that's the hard part, but just working on doing like just teaching myself how to get better with video editing and stuff like that.
I feel like I don't have enough discipline practice when it comes to my stand-up comedy. So I used to back when I did comedy 20 years ago in Portland, Maine, I was a young man. I was serious about trying to make up a profession of it. I used to carry a notebook wherever I went. I used to constantly be bidding people and just writing bits all the time. With every situation I was in, I didn't care if it was a funeral or a trip to the grocery store, I was like actively seeking out funny material, skimming the newspaper back when people still read newspapers for material all the time. And now I honestly find the inspiration in the moment. Like when we were doing the show the other night, I'm actually sitting here next to the notes that I had from the other night. The guys down there in Texas were insulting the state of Maine in a comment feed at the beginning. And I just started, you know, writing notes, and then on the cuff just went on a rant about the state of Maine, which was actually really funny. But same thing when I do a St. John show, I get in the car here and I start once I get through St. Stephen and get onto the highway, I generally shut the stereo off and just start talking to myself. And I start talking about, jazzing myself up to think about things that are funny. And some occasionally things will come out of it that are really, I think are really classic. And, telling the Arlo birth story happened not that way on the way to St. John. The Madeline birth story happened on the way to St. John. The transgender bathroom bit happened on the way to St. John like that. Situationally, like when I was stuck in the ice storm, in St. John, those things, everything revolves around St. John. P.S. Really, very funny. I want to say this to all my St. John followers. I talk about St. John so much that whenever we go anywhere with my daughter, she thinks we're in St. John. She always, like, we were hiking on a trail yesterday and she said, and I said, where are we, babe? And she said, St. John. And I said, okay, good enough. So, our whole family is always mentally in St. John.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't often sit down to generate stuff. When I sit down like that, I'm more like taking the bits and pieces and formulating it into something. I used to be better. The last year or so, I haven't been, like I used to be like you, and I don't have a notebook, but I have my phone with me all the time and I use Google Docs. So that's basically it. And I used to find myself all the time, we're driving somewhere, we're at the grocery store, I've got to either pull over or like may take over on the cart for a minute because I've got to write something down before I forget it. And then I take those pieces and flesh it out. I haven't really been having as many moments like that over the past year. Part of it, I think, is just because, my work situation is kind of stressful and I'm so deep into that. When I come home at the end of the day, my brain just wants to turn off. Whereas when I had jobs where there's a lot of just sitting at my desk thinking about nonsense, it kind of keeps things going. But there's more of a mental investment with my current job, and I think that that affects the creative piece of it. But sometimes I do, like the newest my newest bit that I've been working, that I was working on mostly before everything got shut down, was something that, like, after my show at the New Punchlines Comedy Club, like I saw somebody in the audience and that kind of sparked something. And like, that's the thing that I've been working on.
Yeah. You talk about having like a mundane job and it being beneficial to comedy. When I was in college, I worked at a ticket office in the Merrill Auditorium, selling tickets for concerts and that sort of thing. And I wrote a ton of content there because in between customer calls, there was, and there's no stress in selling tickets, man. It's like, you answer the phone. Hey, thanks for calling Portix. This is Brian. How can I help you? Oh, you want to buy tickets for Lyle Lovett? Here you go. We have openings in this section, that section. I could literally do my job while writing material. I could do completely opposite tasks and not even be thinking about the job that I was doing. Now, as a teacher, I'm so stressed out from the time I get there till the time I leave, and even in the evenings when I get home, that, like you said, like sometimes I'm too exhausted to find the funny in my day. And then I get home to toddlers, of course, and it's difficult to try to think selfishly when you've got a 1-year-old and a 3.5-year-old running around the house. It just, there's not a lot of time to do that. Yeah. Occasionally the kids will actually inspire great material. But a lot of the times I don't find that I have that, you know, that free time in my mind or in my physical life to write comedy, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how other good, I see great comics all the time who have families that write incredible material. And I just wonder if they assign themselves office hours or they shut their family out for an hour or two or how they do that.
Yeah, well, I don't really have one. I don't have any kids to bother me if I'm doing something. Like, I come down to my little man cave down here, and May will leave me alone if I need her to. But just, yeah, generating stuff hasn't been coming. But I think it's mostly just because with as few shows as we had, even under normal circumstances in New Brunswick, there's more pressure to come up with new stuff because a lot of the same people are coming to the shows and you don't want to bore people. Mm-hmm. But like, even if I came up with a new 10 minutes since I did that show at Punchlines in November, like in the grand scheme of things, that's not bad anyway. For somebody that does as few shows as I'm able to do. Because you know, there I kind of feel guilty about it with myself, but then I'm watching other people. I'm like, there's a lot of people that that, and there's nothing wrong with it. We need to work on stuff, but there's some people that they've got certain jokes that they do every single set that they're on, and I don't do that. So, which again, that's just if we that's the normal way of doing things, just, but you know, I try to mix it up because we have a lot of the same audiences.
This is
sorry.
This is
sorry.
This is James Mullinger Comedy Bootcamp winner, third place Hubcap Open Mic Contest winner, second place up to One Liner Showdown winner, also last place Roast Battle champion, whatever that means. This is 107.3 FM, and you're listening to St. John Forward Radio.
And that was Matt Keenan, who didn't say his own name in that whole thing, I think.
So many credits.
You're killing me, man.
So many credits.
It must be, I think for the touring comics, our friends like Scott Belford and Andrew Albert, who are out there touring across the country, and Jay Malone, and it must be nice to know that you're not going to see the same audience twice in probably a year, right? Like yeah. Andrew will start, and he's all the way over from Vancouver, all the way up to Nova Scotia, back and forth. Like, he may never see the same audience twice in a year.
Yeah, and that's great. Like, we'd all be much stronger comedians than we are if we had the opportunity to do the same bit over and over again, like back to back to back to back to new people and fresh ears on it, without because you know, you could do that here. It would take you 3 months to get the equivalent of 1 week of a touring person out, but towards the end of that 3 months, if it's not working, you don't know if it's because the material sucks or because the people that you're performing it for have already heard it 5 times.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be great. Like if I lived in like New York City or LA or something, where you could do like multiple sets per night and every night, then I could really hone stuff. But cause I've seen like even the limited amount, sometimes I've gotten to do like 3 nights in a row and work on the same like 10-minute bit. And that's been a treat. And like, when I've done the Fringe Festival, even when we were editing the Cigarettes and Cool Ranch, like going through that fifth night in a row of doing a full hour, just going through the editing and pointing out to like Adam and Ian, like, oh, that's something that I thought of off the cuff the night before, and this is a thing that was from like the Tuesday night one, and like even to see how much it improved night one compared to night five. Was a big deal. So if I got to do like night 25, then it would be 5 times better, probably.
Imagine. And that's why those comics, those big comics, can write a new album once a year, right? Like, yeah, that's why the Jim Gaffigans of the world, and obviously, you know, the George Carlins and all those guys that are professionals. I mean, if you're doing a stadium every night, and you're in a tour bus and or in a plane, and all you're doing is thinking about your show the night before, and then you've got the other 16 hours of the day to the waking hours of the day to think about all those, you know, all those little nuances, those things that you can change. That's the key. So we're on the show, I do want to say, looking back on our show in Dallas, the Dallas Zoom show we did on Thursday night, two things. One, thank you to Dave Young, if he ever hears this radio show, and Jessica Roy from Dallas for inviting me to the show and allowing John on the show. But to the listeners out there, I want to tell you how proud I am of John Forward and of the St. John comedy scene. Yeah, I love you, big guy. We were, I think there was 7 or 8 comics on the show. And to their credit, there were some very funny comics on the show. But I was fourth in line, and John was the closer. And both John and I, by far, got some of the strongest reactions that any comics got. And I feel like, hands down, our material was just funny. We were every bit as good as the comics in Dallas, Texas, which I think, if not better. And I'm happy about that. There were some great comics. The girl Charlotte who did the bit about the Anne Frank musical. Very, very funny. The Ginger Jew, as she called herself. Jessica Roy was very funny. There's a guy who was in his bathroom who I didn't catch his name, but he was filming in his bathroom that I thought was really, really funny. But it was a great show. Yeah. It was a cool experience. And John actually, so John doesn't have to toot his own horn. The rules for this show were that the mics were off for all of the people watching and all the other comics. And when John began his set, he said, turn the mics on. I want to hear people. I want people to be able to react. I feel like it's kind of silly that people can't react. And they turned the mics on for everyone who was watching the performance. And it improved the performance drastically. And you could hear people laughing. I had to shut my own mic off because I couldn't stop laughing. John was doing his Diamonds bit about this trip to Blush. And it was hysterical. I was laughing so hard I had to shut my mic off. I was afraid John wouldn't be able to talk. But really an interesting, cool experience. And I got another one coming up on the 30th for the East Coast Canadian Comedy. Margot Landry is setting that one up. Are you on that show, John?
No, I might watch it, though, if I'm available.
All right. But anyways, I think we did a great job, John. I don't know what your take on it is. And
yeah, it was fun. Like, on paper, doing an online comedy show like this seems like a terrible idea. It's not ideal, but it's better than nothing. But I think having the mics on, it makes a lot of difference. I've done that East Coast one a couple of times. The first show, they had the mics on, and there were some interruptions, but it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't a deal breaker. Then the second show, they wanted the mics off, and again, I pulled my diva move and asked them to turn the microphones back on, and it did make things much better. I would rather maybe be interrupted by somebody, which is a possible problem, than a for sure 100% problem of having zero laughs. And I think it's much better. I think you need to have somebody like paying attention to it. And if there is somebody that's being annoying and disruptive, you can just mute them, or worst case, boot them right out of the meeting if you need to. If it's like being maliciously annoying and they don't take the hint after the first time they get muted.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's key. It's not the same as being in front of a live actual audience, but that little bit of live feedback makes all the difference in the world for both, like, performance wise and probably watching it. You know, the greatest tragedy for me is that I didn't get to watch myself and experience my own set as a fan. but like, even watching comedy is not as fun for the audience if there's no laugh. Like, all those videos on YouTube of whatever sitcom, which are usually like garbage sitcoms, like Big Bang Theory or something like that. But like, without the laugh track, it's just pitiful. And it makes all the difference in the world. It's good feedback for the comedian, which feeds back into the performance, but it's also contagious. Like, some of the laughs that I got doing the Texas show where that one guy that just kept there was one guy that just kept turning his microphone on anyway. I don't remember what his name was. It just said Galaxy A20 on the screen. But like, he would just have like a very audible chuckle at weird times, and that made me laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And stuff that. But yeah, this is not bad. And since we can't go out and do it in front of an audience, we might as well give it a go.
Do you think it will open up a new venue of stand-up comedy performance? Do you think like these Zoom shows and this sort of thing will continue after the lockdown is out of place? I mean, do you think people will tune in to Zoom shows?
I hope not. That's a stopgap for now, but it's not. I don't think it's ever going to replace the live thing unless they want to reopen stuff and people are just still too scared to come out. I think people, as soon as they're allowed to, are going to be craving live entertainment again. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think for podcasting, this has worked out great, and that may continue. Like, it's much easier for you and I to have this conversation right now than it is for me to wait for you to happen to be in town and available.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've also really enjoyed, Four Story Walk Up with you and Godso and Arif. It's been nice that you guys could be in separate venues and have those conversations and hang out with each other. And it's the real, this, the Zoom is, I'm not I'm not a product spokesman for Zoom, but of all of the online conversation venue, this video conferencing venues, Zoom so far is the one that seems it's the most seamless, and it seems to be the smoothest. I've tried Google Meets; it's terrible, laggy. A lot of stuff is not cool about it. Facebook Live chats isn't awesome. You can't record the conversation. First of all, second of all, you can't mute other people. And it's sort of, it's not great, but this one is like, I mean, it's really like we're in real time together and I could see you perfectly and you could see me perfectly. It's good platform.
Yeah. Well, even with me and, Brian and Arif, that's something that I would like to continue doing anyway, just because, well, there is the video component. We never would have had to think about it before. And we certainly don't have three separate cameras that we could set up and have to edit those all together and get everything synced up, which would be a giant pain. The Zoom, it's kind of automatic and it's better than the handful. We've done a couple of them where we're just sitting on my living room couch and the three of us are kind of side by side, all facing one way. It's hard to have a conversation where you can't, if you turn your head to the side, then you're not talking into the microphone anymore. And it's kind of a problem. So you're kind of playing to the camera, but in this case, playing to the camera, I'm looking at the person I'm speaking to right in the face. So I think, like, even though like Brian and Arif live like a 5-minute drive away from here, if we're going to do a podcast again, even when the quarantine's up, I think that's probably a better way to go about it.
Now, John, can you turn this into, will this be still broadcast on St. John Radio as well?
Yeah, I've been sending the audio file to the radio station on Mondays and then just putting the video version up on YouTube.
That's amazing. So great. So now you've got two separate platforms that you can share your radio show. That's great.
Yeah, so I've done a minor amount of visual type stuff, which isn't really going to work in the audio version. I had Adam Landry show up in my basement window and doing the podcast. If you can't see that, it's not the same thing. I interviewed Brian Godso as a giant stuffed duck that was next to me in the video, which if you're just listening to the audio, that's just going to sound bizarre. But whatever. It's something. And even just for the sake of local FM, who probably isn't putting out much new content now because the university is locked up, I've got the one show. I don't know how many shows are still going or not, but I'm one of the handful of things that's still putting out new content. The audio version's slightly different in that I'm trying to, if like the video is like an hour and 1 minute long, I got to trim it down to like, I aim for like 59:30 for the radio, just so it fills the hour time slot and they've got room to put PSAs or ads or whatever in between. But I'll go through and like, I can see the audio waveform and see if there's like a big gap in sound, which people will put up with if it's audio. Like you can see me get up out of my seat and go shut the door or something like that. But an audio that just sounds like dead air. So we'll tighten up some of those gaps.
Wow. Neat. Yeah. So you really are you're getting a handle on production. That's great.
Yeah, and doing this and doing the thing with Brian and Arif has been fun. I attempted live streaming some video games a few times, but nobody was watching it. So, and I have more fun playing when I'm not live streaming, so I stopped doing that. But I've been doing, I figured out how to do, like, I'll play, like, Trudeau or something giving one of his daily speeches on YouTube, and I figured out how to record it and like with me pausing it and commenting on it and starting again without having to do that all in editing. I can kind of do it live to tape. Wow. So yeah, that stuff's been fun. So I think we're all coming out of this with some new skills on top of that stuff. Just I mentioned the other night, I'm reading a book on economics just so that I know a little bit more what I'm talking about with that. So part of my routine, I'll get up and I'll have some breakfast and I'll sit down and make myself read an hour of this book. And there's a podcast that I've been going through kind of with it, that each section of the book at the end of that, it's a few chapters. Then I'll sit down and listen to an hour podcast of two people kind of breaking down what it was about, which makes it a little bit easier to wrap my head around.
I feel like I wish I was doing more of that. I don't know, man. I mean, I guess I am doing some of that, but my stuff is all about homesteading and farming. That I'm doing a lot of investment in trying to expand my knowledge base of how to run a successful small farm. Like my Sue and I have a goal this year of actually starting to sell our produce on the market. And we have a goat. We have a pregnant goat, so she's going to be milking in the next 3 or 4 months. So I built a goat milking stand. And we're going to start to sell yogurt and cheese and that sort of thing. I really want to try to move into a life of farming within the next 5 years, if possible. If I can get my debt paid down, get the infrastructure in place, I'd really like to be working for myself out here on the farm, which would be amazing for my stand-up comedy too, because once I start running my own farm, I can certainly have the leisure of being able to go and do more things. As long as I can get a hired hand in here to help, tend the goats and the chickens while we're out for a day and whatever, it'll be great.
Put those kids to work.
That's right. Madeline loves to be outside helping me, man. Like for her, farming is like playtime, right? She loves to go out and we weeded the strawberry patch last week and she was in there just as much as I was, trying to weed the strawberry patch out and mulch it and get the manure and, collect the eggs and all the stuff that we do here on the farm. But this whole pandemic, lockdown, coronavirus thing has made me really feel like this is the right life for me. Like I really feel so secure with my family out here. And I feel like with a little tweaking and with some labor and investment, we could be providing our community with lots of fresh produce and like I said, dairy and cheese or whatever, so that people that live right here in our small community of Alexander won't have to go into a big grocery store and worry about infection. If this ever happens again, they could come here and get produce in a safe way. And I think that would be awesome. And if not for the rest of the community, for ourselves, like to have more skills. We bought a cider press this year, cause we have all the apple trees. We bought a grain mill so that we can do our own grain and that sort of thing. So we're moving towards being really self-sustainable. One other thing I just want to throw out there that's been fascinating is that the whole toilet paper pandemic, right? I'm going to call that a pandemic because it spread like wildfire. People were like just out seeking. I don't know about up there, but down here it was like toilet paper.
You can get it, but it was a few weeks. Every time I've been to the grocery store, it's there. They don't have... There's a lot more empty shelves than there normally would be. And they've got signs up saying like 2 paper products per family.
So Sue, because women clearly use more toilet paper than men. They have to, they have a different set of equipment down there.
What do you mean? What do they have? They have penises, right?
No, John, no. Women have vaginas. And okay. They pee out of their urethra, but it's a little bit, it's not as easy to shake, but
okay. I thought it was just May that she was in some terrible accident, but
no.
Okay.
No. But so anyway, so Sue, has created like, single use or not single use, but wipes that are stacked on the back of the flush so that she can just dab it. And then she puts them into a netted bag that we have, and then she can throw the whole netted bag into the wash and it cleans all of those out. And then she can put them back out for reuse. And so then we have, instead of having to wipe every time, right? So, and if I had a bidet, I'd be using it, man. Like I don't have a bidet. I'm thinking about getting one installed, but there's lots of ways to reduce that paper use. So in the course of this whole pandemic, the last toilet paper we bought was on March 14th. And we've only used like, I don't know, 4 rolls of toilet paper since then. Yeah. Because we're doing a more sustainable means when you don't need it. If you need to blow your nose, don't use toilet paper Kleenex. You can use handkerchiefs. Were around for a long time. You know, we have the capacity to do laundry. So,
well, I don't know if carrying around a booger rag in your pocket's good for a pandemic, but if nobody's going anywhere, then yeah, you just throw it in the hanky basket.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. We are at home. There's no sense not doing it. Yeah. We also
defeats the purpose of sneezing into your elbow if you're like, oh, and then you pull this gross snot rag out of your pocket with your bare hands and put it away.
If these are single use, you blow your nose, you throw them into the thing. My wife also cloth diapers, which has been awesome. So there's no
Sue's still wearing diapers?
Yeah, she is. She is. She's a big girl, though, and I think she'll be out of them soon. I'm hoping.
Yeah, we we're working transition on into the pull-ups first.
Yep, that's right. Cloth diapers for little Arlo, right? And then she breastfeeds, so we don't have to worry about formula and that sort of thing. And we've really been, I mean, I think we, since March 13th, I'm actually looking at the bags of garbage because they're in our garbage container out here. I think we've used a total of 6 average tall kitchen size bags of garbage since March 13th. And it's just plastic, really.
Yeah, we're still the same amount of garbage. The garbage trucks have skipped us for the third time in a row last week. I had to call them. I don't know what it is. They may have just, like, we live on the little dead-end street. We're the only ones on it. But I've had to call them the last 3 garbage days in a row. I don't know if they switch companies and they just keep forgetting about us. The first 2 times I thought, because, like, normally we're up early and getting ready to go to work, so I might have had it out by like 8:30 or 9 o'clock, which may have been too late. The first and the second times when I called them, I told them that it was out by 7, but I was lying. But this last time I put it out the night before and they still didn't come pick it up. So I know they're out to get me. It's because of my dangerous views.
Do you pay for the garbage?
It's part of our property tax, I think.
Yeah, well, there
it's,
you go.
It's a city thing. I haven't hired garbage collectors to come to my house. If I did, then I would just say, you know what, I'm going with the other company. But
yeah, I have to drive to the dump. I get a dump sticker on my truck, and I have to drive my garbage to the dump. Which is
not sure
nice.
If I think our dump's open. Maybe I'm not sure. There's something about the landfills here where But having a car, just throwing garbage bags in the trunk is not ideal. Anyway, I've done that before and just had just baked in garbage water in my trunk until I had to get it like professionally cleaned.
Oh, PU. No, you don't want that. No. Yeah, I've had that happen before. I've had a bag of garbage back when I used to drive a Jeep. I sometimes treat the Jeep like a pickup truck, and it was terrible, man. You get some old, nasty, stank garbage smell in your car. It doesn't go away, and then every time it gets hot in there, you can smell that old stanky sour milk. Terrible. Yeah, no thank you. That's why I have a pickup truck.
Yeah, well, I'd like to. I've got our fence got busted during the last big windstorm because it blew some branches in it and snapped the 4x4s. I want to fix that. I need some new lattice work on the front of my desk, my front of my deck, but I can't. Home Depot's still open, but I can't fit that stuff in my car. So I would need to, I think they do delivery, but I kind of have to, I don't mind doing stuff like that on my own, but I'm not very well skilled at it. So for me to sit down and figure out exactly how much of what that I need and how, like, what size I need them to cut it for me, because I don't have a table saw or anything. So if I'm getting lumber, I'm going to need them to pre-cut it for me. So I need to sit down and get it with a measuring tape and figure out exactly what I need if I'm going to put in a big order and get it delivered. I'm going to need to rent some tools. I need to get some sort of hammer drill to stick some bolts into my my concrete foundation around the edge of my yard. I'd like to get that done while I'm here, but I need to figure it out. Generally, my dad would help me out with stuff like that, but he's probably not going to drive to St. John and get coronavirus. He's old.
Yeah. No, my dad is usually one of my my key helpers too when I'm doing a big project around the house here. If I'm doing fencing or if I'm building a building or whatever, he usually comes up from Southwest Harbor. But again, he's in a vulnerable position, man. I mean, he's I want to say my dad's 68 this year, maybe 68 this year. I don't want to put him in that predicament where he's putting himself at risk. Not here. I mean, if he came here, we have no contact with the outside world. We'd be safe. But if he has to stop for gas in between here and there or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Well, worst case, I could probably just figure out what tools I need and he could leave it out in the driveway and I could drive up to Fredericton and get them. Gas is cheap these days.
But. Hey, John, listen, I'm sorry, but I get a load of pallets coming in here. Hold on. Coming down the driveway. I got to go ahead and get out and unload this load of pallets, bud.
All right. Well, we've probably had enough. We can probably wrap it up here and you can take your pallet delivery.
All right, man. Listen, thank you. It was great talking to you, man.
You too.
All right.
All right.
Later.
Bye.
Bye. Now I got to figure out how to leave this thing. Stop video.